Pastor Will Wheaton on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case for a Lutheran approach to the Church Fathers.
The thing that really is wonderful is to be able to read them as the witnesses that they are to the saving gospel of Christ, to deburden them from infallibility. Nobody believes they're infallible. Everybody agrees that there are things in them that they don't agree with. But the reading of the Fathers itself can be a huge help and light. If people have walked the terrain you walked before and made a map, it might be worthwhile to consult it before you head out in the same terrain. And in that way, their work through the Scriptures has been most beneficial to the Church across time.
You can meet and hear Will Wheaton June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Oh, it's probably been, let's see, maybe 60 years. 60 years these arguments have been floating around, mostly in Western Christendom, for the ordination of women to the pastoral office. That's all the longer anyone has had the temerity to suggest that the Church has been misreading St. Paul for millennia. But, you know, we live in times full of temerity and well, I guess, you know, just outright foolishness. There are arguments that are old. There are arguments that are new. The latest arguments coming for the ordination of women are kind of a piece with the old ones. Basically, we've been misreading Paul, but they come in a more sophisticated form. They come from, scholars and female pastors who know their languages. They're not simply dismissing what St. Paul has to say. They try to grapple with the text. You got to give them credit for that. But how do we respond to these arguments? Joining us to respond to some of these for the ordination of women, Dr. John Nordling. He's Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of an online article for Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, titled Fallacious Fallacies in Arguing for Women's Ordination. Dr. Nordling, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Todd.
Before we get into the particular arguments and our response to them, you say that a good Lutheran response to a lot of these arguments is not only to have a Lutheran reading or interpretation over against that of, say, the Reformed and the Evangelicals on the key text with regarding to women in the Church, but also, and this is what I'm curious about, also that we need to crank out good, solid male pastors. Why that second part, John?
Well, boy, that's tough to answer, but not really. What I said in my article was that male pastors are needed to model what it means to be a godly husband and father in this world where this is really under attack and some confusion. I also said that female deaconesses are needed for the same reason, to model for girls and young women what it means to be a godly wife and mother. So certainly a woman can learn Greek and exegete the pertinent passages as well as any man. I don't believe that Linda Belleville did, but I'm not trying to say that at all, that only men can understand the text correctly and women can't. That's utter nonsense.
Well, you mentioned Linda Belleville, who has written recently in a book that's produced by Christians for Biblical Equality, an essay that she wrote, Exegetical Fallacies in Interpreting 1 Timothy 2:11-15. The book is called One Image, One Purpose, One Baptism. And what did you find anything there in her essay that was particularly novel? Anything new, any new directions for those arguing for the ordination of women?
Well, let me say first off, I haven't actually read her larger book. I will admit that. But I would say that her essay that she just wrote is a preface of that larger piece, that larger book. And I really don't think there's a lot that's new. It becomes a matter of splitting hairs ever more finely and minutely. That's basically what it is. But nevertheless, I was asked at the symposia by a pastor to read the essay and respond to it, and that's what I was trying to do, was respond to the sincere questions of a pastor and help him and others just to deal with this way of interpreting the evidence.
Can we at least agree with someone like Linda Belleville that the passage she deals with in that essay, 1 Timothy 2:11 through 15, is, among others, a key passage for answering questions about whether women should be pastors or not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that text, as well as 1 Corinthians 14:33, 34, those are the two texts that really come into consideration more than any others. So, I mean, basically, Belleville believes, if I read her right, that Paul was not forbidding the authoritative teaching of women per se, but that some of the female teachers at Ephesus were overreaching their, you know, their they were teaching men in a domineering kind of way. That's what she says. So, but how she gets to that understanding is just very finely and minutely argued. She thinks that there was an Artemis cult at Ephesus where there was female superiority over men. I've taught classical myth for many years, and I've never understood the cult of Artemis to have that meaning. And if it did, I would say that would be a factor in favor of Paul saying that women shouldn't speak authoritatively. So that's basically what I would have to say about that.
Okay, I wanted to walk through what she claims are the fallacies on how people often read 1 Corinthians 2 on the issue of women in the church. She begins with what you characterize as kind of the contextual historical fallacy, and that Paul, she claims, Paul's overriding concern there in 1 Timothy is to deal appropriately with false teaching and doctrine in the church, and that women in particular are getting so much attention from Paul. Mm-hmm. For what reason does she say Paul gives so much attention, and he does, to women in 1 Timothy?
Well, as she points out, that a lot of the texts in the in 1 Timothy do deal with false teaching, and especially the proper deportment of women. And in my article somewhere, I'm trying to find out exactly where she had kind of percentages for that. I would say that she's absolutely right in that respect, that the proper deportment of women in that church, as well as any other, is important to Paul, and so he does tend to focus on that issue.
So why does she say he's focusing on the issue?
Well, because of her position that women are teaching in a domineering way over men. You know, that they're not teaching at all. She understands it as Paul writes in verse 12 of 1 Timothy 2, I do not permit a woman to teach, didaskein, nor to authentain andros, which is usually translated lord it over a man. So teach a woman to teach, nor to lord it over a man. So the question is, you know, what that second statement has to do with it, you know, to lord it over a man. She thinks it's talking about domineering teaching, women dominating men, whereas we Lutherans would probably say that that is to be understood as a further reflection upon teach, the didaskein as a present infinitive, so keep teaching. And it is true that authentain is only occurs here in the Bible, in the New Testament, and she has plenty of evidence, but I really don't, you know, I waded through it all, and I don't see where she can make the points that she does. It just means to have the upper hand or something like that.
So she's conflating, or she's doing a couple things here. I want to deal with them one at a time. She is saying that we should conflate the ideas of I do not permit a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man. She says those two ideas ought to be pushed together and be read right. as teach in a domineering way, so to speak.
Yeah, right. She thinks there's a war of the sexes going on by the way the text begins, because in verse 8 of chapter 2, 1 Timothy, I do not want men, tous andros, to pray in every place, raising holy hands without anger and without reasoning. So she says that this is showing some dissension, shall we say, in the church there. But, you know, whether that has to be the issue is quite a reading in. I mean, usually that text has been interpreted as just having to do with worship, with peaceable worship, and good worship and liturgy going on in the church. Paul wants peaceableness, so he's not trying to squelch dominating teaching necessarily.
Is she begging the question in that she is assuming this cultural context in Ephesus, where Timothy is pastor, and then she's presuming it without actually proving that such a thing even exists as the context for Paul's words?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's her point of view. That's her point of departure. She invites us in this essay and in her larger book to take it that way, but I don't think there's anything about the text itself that requires it. You know, it's not compelling at all. And it's a stretch. And this type of argumentation, I would say, is hard for the laity to interpret. If you can't work with the Greek, you can't work with the languages. It's misleading, I would say, at the best.
Dr. John Nordling is our guest, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We're responding to some arguments for women's ordination on this Friday afternoon, March the 6th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. And Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues, Etc. 300.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Common and experienced firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one's study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of, A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
Look at them now. Tidy, librarian's hands. Look at these. You're going to put one of these hands into the hands of Jesus Christ, and this perfectly smooth, not calloused, not blistered, not cut up hand is going to go into the hand of the one whose hand has a nail print in it.
In their death, in which they willingly undertook death, they were testifying that there was a life that was laying underneath and all around their own demise.
The devil won because he trapped Johnny into sin, and he'll gladly pretend like he lost and give the stupid fiddle of gold, because when Johnny dies, Johnny's going to hell.
The fact is, God shows us how foolish we are by offering something that seems absolutely most foolish of all.
1 hour from now, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's a little game we play with our listeners every Friday as often as we can. We'll play 4 sound bites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. All you do is listen, then you give us a call, send us an email, a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page, and you vote and decide which one will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's also your opportunity. It's a very rare opportunity to win the LPR bundle package. That's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, mouse pad, and notepad when we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week 1 hour from now. In the meantime, we're talking with Dr. John Nordling of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, responding to some arguments for women's ordination. John, when you were talking before about Linda Belville's arguments here, one of the other, what she says, fallacies that she finds in the reading of that text in 1 Timothy, she spends a lot of time with the words quietly. She spends a lot of time with the phrase to exercise authority. But you note she virtually ignores the phrase with all submissiveness.
Right. Exactly. She says virtually nothing about that, except that when we're teaching, we're not to lord it over each other. But she totally gets wrong the order that there is to be between man and woman. Now, I have another essay. It's a research note in the CTQ 2013, volume 77, 327 and 334. I don't know if you've got time to hear this, but I wanted to just read some of this if I had time.
Please do.
Okay, this is what I write. First, in the New Testament, hupotasso, to submit, regularly describes the submission of someone in an ordered arrangement to another who is above the first, that is, in authority over that person. Here it is instructed to consider the examples that support this admittedly sweeping assertion, and it is sweeping, I admit. The submission of Jesus to his parents, Luke 2:51, of demons to the disciples, Luke 10:17 and 20, of citizens to the governing authorities, Romans 13:1, of all things in the universe to Christ, 1 Corinthians 15:27. Of angels, authorities, and powers to Christ, 1 Peter 3:22, of Christ to God the Father, 1 Corinthians 15:28, and there's a bunch of other ones, and finally, of wives to their husbands, Colossians 3:18, Titus 2:4 to 5, 1 Peter 3:5. Then I go on. In none of the passages wherein the verb hupotasso appears, are the relationships ever reversed? Thus, Joseph and Mary are not subject to the boy Jesus. The disciples are not subject to demons. The governing authorities are not subject to the citizens, nor Christ to the universe, nor the unseen powers, nor God the Father to Christ the Son, nor leaders to the church members, nor Christ to the church, nor masters to slave, nor God to Christians. And here is the pertinent relationship that all the others lead up to, not husbands to wives. Therefore, according to the textual evidence, hupotasso does not describe symmetrical relationships at all, but rather ordered relationships wherein some persons are over and others under. So the evidence is very clear if you look up the passages as I have and weigh them. And, you know, they don't support Linda Belleville's interpretation. They go quite the opposite way. And there's other things in the text from 1 Timothy 2 that also go quite against her way of interpreting that she just totally disregards. But I didn't have time in my essay, actually, to consider them. So
do you suspect, and we could do nothing more than suspect, that Linda Belleville here says so little about in all submissiveness that you've just described there because she knows the stuff you've looked up and she realizes that it does not serve her argument very well?
Well, right. And see, the whole point of this CBE, the Christians for Biblical Equality, is that the sexes, man and woman, are exactly the same. Well, they are, but they're also different. Okay? I mean, that's the relationship. Now, one thing that I think is very pertinent here are the relationships in the Holy Trinity between God the Father and Christ the Son. They are both God, okay, but they differ. They have different roles within the Holy Trinity. And so it is within the marital relationship. A man is a man who is just as equal to his woman, the wife, but there are different relationships between that relationship, okay, different dynamics. For example, only a woman can give birth, okay? And this is a doctrine that's very unpopular. People don't like to hear it, but that's how it's expressed biblically. And we give up a lot if we just reduce marriage or things like that to just being stark equality. You know, it's not. There's an order in the relationship, and that's what really needs to be taught right now. I mean, that's what pastors need to be teaching their people, especially young people, so that they meet and marry and are happily married. Okay, that's what the issue is right now that the church faces, as I see it.
The other fallacy that we need to mention here that she says, or she asserts, comes in the classical reading of 1 Timothy 2 on women in the church. And you mentioned this briefly before. It's a little grammatical, so you'll have to explain. It's the use of the infinitive verbs to teach and to exercise authority. What does she want to do with those present infinitives?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It's a very fine point. She wants to turn the infinitive into kind of a noun, I believe, but she doesn't see it as being a verb, and a verb that complements see, there's already a verb, epitrepo, so the infinitive complements that idea. I do not permit a woman to keep teaching, but she wants to make it teaching and lording over. She turns it into kind of a nominal expression instead of a verbal one. And again, you know, she can point to plenty of evidence where people have done this, but most people know that no Greek realize that infinitives are every bit as much a verb as any nominal features they may have. So it's really a very weak argument in the end.
Now, this is the latest in Reform/evangelical offerings in favor of women serving as pastors at some point or another. And my reading of it, Dr. Nordling, the situation, that is that that evangelicalism is ready to cave on this at some point, and not for any complicated exegetical reasons. It's just the force of culture. What do you expect? What do you expect to be the result of someone sitting down, trying to, and I got to give her credit, she's engaging the text, which most advocates for women's ordination simply don't do. What do you expect the result to be?
Well, as she says, there's kind of a war going on within evangelicalism. Now, there's another person that reviewed her book named Andreas Kostenberger, who's a professor. This was like 10 years ago, and it's mentioned. If you get my article, there's a link to it. And he points out a whole bunch of other problems with her book, her larger treatment. Yeah, the evangelicals are fighting over this. And then, you know, I really took this, maybe I shouldn't have, but I was minding my own business, and one day this broadside came in the mail, you know, and I thought it was a book catalog, but then I noticed there were essays in it. And they're written by evangelical people, but it seems like the Missouri Synod is their target. You know, it's like they're watching us, and they don't like what we have to say about these issues. And so it's like they're bringing the fight to us, and that's why I felt the need to write back, you know. So, and as you know, there are people in our church who think that women should be ordained, or there is this absolute equality between the sexes, you know, that there are no differences in roles. That's just totally lost on them. But it really does violence to the text, and it does violence to the way a man and woman can relate in Christ, what marriage is about at its best. That's what we're fighting for, really. And I, as I pointed out in my article, I just don't think evangelicals have as high a respect for the office of the ministry than Lutherans typically have. You know, there are certain qualifications for the office of the ministry, we Lutherans believe. Not just men should occupy the office, but men that have studied theology and that know Greek and so such. You know, there are certain things. That's what seminary should be for, to learn these points that go into the making of a theologian. So not just men can be pastors, but suitably trained men. And I realize this is not very popular. A lot of people are really bristling at what I have to say, but I think in this day of age, we need more pastors who are better trained and not worse trained. So that's why I teach Greek. That's what I'm here at the seminary to do, is to teach Greek. And I certainly welcome any woman in there as well, because women can learn Greek just as well as any man can. I've seen it time and again. But Greek is the beginning of the process of becoming a theologian. It's an exacting discipline, but thrilling and wonderful. And it's just like if you want to be a pilot, you need to learn some mathematics. If you want to be a pastor, you should learn Greek at the very minimum. That's the beginning to everything else that follows. I wanted to say one thing, if I got the time.
Sure.
The title, Fallacious Fallacies in Arguing for Women's Ordination, was not my choice of a title. That was assigned to me by the pastor that put this up on the Logia online. And furthermore, Belleville really doesn't, she just uses fallacy as kind of a way to work through the material. So some people have kind of faulted my argument for that reason, but it was, in all fairness to myself, something that was assigned to me by my editor, in effect. So
before we let you go, John, your thoughts on why a man, you talked glowingly there about preparing well-prepared men for the ministry. Why should a man listening to us right now consider studying for the office of the ministry right there at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana?
Well, because being a pastor is a very great profession. It's a tough one, and it's not getting any easier, but it makes such a difference, not only in the eternal destinies of sinners, but also in making this world a better place to be. I mean, the Christian church is a haven for sinner saints. And the pastor who's been trained properly, the congregation is his Garden of Eden. And what he does is he reads the texts and ruminates on them and shares just a little of what he's learning with a very hungry world. People are literally dying for the gospel. And so going to seminary is a way, it's like becoming a disciple and walking with Jesus, just like the disciples did for 3 years, and seminary lasts 3 years too. So anyway, for all you men out there that are thinking of it, now is the time to do it, and don't wait, because learning Greek becomes more and more difficult the older you get. So do it now.
Folks, there's a great opportunity for those of you who are considering either the vocation of pastor or deaconess to actually visit the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary there in Fort Wayne, Indiana, meet great professors like Dr. John Nordling and all the others there, see what campus life is like, see what chapel life is like there. It's called Prayerfully Consider Visit, March the 19th through the 21st at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Find out more by giving them a call, 1-800-481-2155. Or visiting them on the web, ctsfw.edu. They're forming servants in Jesus Christ to teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. John Nordling is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and author of an online article for Logia, the Journal of Lutheran Theology, titled Fallacious Fallacies in Arguing for Women's Ordination. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. John, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome. All the best to you, Todd, and to Issues, Etc.
When we come back from this break on this Friday afternoon, it's This Week in Pop American Christianity. We'll talk about a couple evangelical leaders that are getting direct revelations from God. Chris Roseborough will be our guest.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What if we made it clear to the Sunday morning visitor that Jesus is actually present, forgiving sins? I've written the second part of my essay, Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper, and you can read it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Eric Rapp's journey from the New Age through Methodist Pietism to Confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen on Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.
How would you like to attend a conference and hear Paul Meyer, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, David Menton, Chris Roseborough, Jonathan Fisk, and Will Wheaton? You're invited to the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.